Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another wonderful episode of the best Power Rangers podcast out there, Voices from the Grid. I am your ever snarky Red Ranger, Sasha Kaplan, and joined today is the fabulous Green Ranger that really needs no introduction, but he's getting one anyway, Mr. Ben Taylor.
Yo, what up? It's me, your boy, Ben Taylor. The sarcastic duo is back. And there is much to sass about.
I think the sarcastic duo doesn't quite roll off the tongue. The sarcastic squad, the snarky snipebacks.
We'll have to workshop it and come back to it
in turbo.
Come back to it in turbo. Yeah.
So today we are reviewing two episodes called Bulk Fiction and Song Sung Yellow. Which exist.
Yeah, and this is also the second episode of a 5-episode run of Voices from the Grid for me. So I'm going to have watched like 20 or so episodes in a row, and I'm going to hate myself. Because most of it is the Gold Ranger saga. Anyway.
Boy. Well, all I can say is it dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
But I made up for it in the stress of everyday life of working full time and being a grad student. So did I really win? Not really. But anyway. So
you didn't have to review season 2 and remember, so probably.
Which one? Oh yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so our first episode that we're going to be talking about is Bulk Fiction. The major point of this, it's a really weird title for the episode, isn't it?
Not really. I mean, it is insofar that it's a reference to an R-rated movie. But the actual, because of all the different things that Bulk tries to go through to woo his girlfriend, his love interest, when what he needed to do was be himself. The idea of a Bulk Fiction is very apt for the episode.
I guess. So just to kind of give folks an overview, the main plot of this episode is that Bulk meets the captain's daughter and gets a little crush. And over the course of the episode, he tries to impress her. That ends up backfiring on Lieutenant Stone, who gets fired, and Bulk and Skull quit. Kind of in a show of solidarity to Lieutenant Stone for reasons
that we will never understand.
And then, of course, there is a side plot of Billy's cool robot car toy, remote controlled powered car toy that looks pretty fun. And poor Rocky could not find a decade to dress up as for the life of him. So let's start with Bulk and Skull shenanigans, because their story is kind of the most, or I guess Bulk's story is kind of the prevalent point of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bulk meets the captain's daughter and he has a crush on her, and he goes to a character we've seen him interact with on a number of occasions, Tanya, and ask her for advice. Which was kind of nifty. I liked that, you know, the last episode we recorded had the episode of Adam and Tanya studying at school. And then Bulk and Skull were like, oh, you shouldn't walk home alone. And Tanya was like, I'll walk you guys home. And so it's kind of like they have this, like, I don't know if we can call it a friendship, but like an acquaintanceship that they have with Tanya, that we've seen them interact in a positive way with each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just finding connections where there aren't any, because there's nothing to grasp on.
So there's something that I talk about, that I'm going to talk about in a future episode. Spoiler alert, we record these out of order. Which is in the very next episode of Voices from the Grid, in the episode Game of Honor, where it is heavily implied there that Adam and Tanya are kind of dating.
Okay, so I'm not crazy. Because no. I have a note for that in Song Sung Yellow.
Yeah, no. Because the two of them are spending a lot of time together, among other reasons, like her calling him sweetie and things like that. And him getting jealous when Sean hugs her. But it is... If you take into account Song Sung Yellow, which will be the next episode we talk about today, Tanya has been in, quote unquote, Angel Grove for 25 episodes of television. Like, we're at the kind of halfway point of the season. And so far, she has been a baseball ringer, excellent at learning martial arts, a brilliant singer to the point of getting a recording contract, if you look at next episode, and Bulk's love guru. I'm not saying they're trying to overcompensate with Tanya at all by making her excellent at everything. But the woman has no weaknesses. None. Like, the other Rangers have slight weaknesses to them, right? Like Tommy, he's a jock, right? He doesn't really do social very well. Billy, he's a nerd. He doesn't do social very well. Rocky.
Enough said.
Doors. And Kat's just kind of an idiot.
He's afraid. She has a thing about water when she was a cat.
Yeah. And in the Turbo movie where her powers are soluble. But like, Tanya doesn't seem to have any of these weaknesses. She's just great at everything she turns her hands to. So, I don't know.
Talk about my thoughts on that next episode.
All right, let me rephrase that. She's great in universe at everything she turns her hands to. She's like the complete opposite of Trini. Trini, who didn't have her own thing. She was just a cipher for everyone else's thing. And now Tanya is like the flip side of that and is like...
But she had Tai Chi in her doll collection.
That's true, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's nice to see... It's weird because at other points in this season, the Rangers treat Bulk and Skull like they're radioactive. Right. And they do... The producers of the show, especially towards the end of the season, go out of their way to keep the Rangers and Bulk and Skull separate as much as possible. And I think that's because Bulk and Skull were getting ready to go into their own spin-off series, and they didn't want to get people's hopes up that the Rangers would be in that series, so that they'd gotten used to seeing Bulk and Skull away from the Rangers. But here, it's just that it reminds me of the last episode of season 3. It reminds me of Another Brick in the Wall, where the Rangers and Bulk and Skull see each other as equals. And big thumbs up.
I'm sorry, I just learned that Bulk and Skull had a planned spin-off series.
Yeah, didn't you know that?
I did not know that.
So at the end of this season, they get the offer to go off to France. To become
special
detectives. And the idea was that was going to be a spin-off series. But what they did is they put together a quote-unquote pilot for it to see if people would buy it. But the problem is they made the pilot a Power Rangers clip show. So everyone had already seen all of the content that was in this video, straight-to-video pilot. So barely anyone bought it. So.
That is so depressing.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, anywho, so let's talk like a little bit more about, so Bulk, What I thought was really interesting is that Bulk thinks of going to Tanya first and like doesn't even ask for Skull for advice, even though, which like is kind of makes sense because it's not like Skull has that much better, you know, experience with girls. But he had a couple of cute moments with Kimberly. Like he could have told
dance
him-
with Kim. You got to dance with Kim.
Exactly. I'm like, ask your buddy Skull, who's just going to confirm what Tanya tells you in the next scene, which is to be yourself. But that doesn't work until it does.
Yeah. So, there's a really interesting moment where right when they, before they meet the daughter of the captain, they're chasing this remote control car through clearly a sandpit.
Yep.
Which you later find out is Billy's remote control car.
Yep.
That he is remote controlling from the community center, than the juice bar, miles away.
I get nothing. I also had a note about that. I was like, I just kind of assumed that like Billy was playing around with it outside and then like went into the juice bar and then Bulk and Skull just followed the car and him without realizing.
But when you, watch it, it's right. You don't get that forever. It feels like he's been in the juice bar for a while.
Yeah, right. It was weird.
And then Bulk and Skull write him some citations. Hand them to him. He looks at them and just hands them back. He's like, no.
Well, in his defense, those citations are for like real vehicles. And you can't, I don't know what was on those citations.
Don't you dare tell me that you can't do something because of a real world reason in Angel Grove. This place.
I gave you an explanation and you're not taking it.
Because your explanation is bad.
That's the only one I've got because this is Angel Grove.
Are you trying to say there's a very simple explanation for this?
There is, in this case, a very simple explanation. But speaking of Billy, so let's kind of give context for the existence of this toy. The juice bar is doing another event of which Ernie clearly does not get any money for, as we find out next episode. They're doing a toy drive and the shtick is you have to bring a toy to donate in order to gain admission, which is actually, I think that's a great idea. And that was going to be the toy that Billy is going to bring. But then Billy is building something in the command center. And then he's like, oh, I need to get something from my lab. I'll be back. And then we see him like walking towards the command center. I'm like, wait, we don't even know if it's exactly the command center. We just see him walking. And I'm like, this is not your lab. Did you just like to go on a walk with your car? And then we find out later that he was on his way to the command center. Right. And then he's attacked by cogs. And I was like, oh, cool. We're going to see Billy fight again. We haven't seen that in a while. I got really excited for 2 seconds. Because there's a point where like the cogs grab. He does manage to like knock off a couple cogs, right? And then they get his communicator and they're overwhelmed. And then there's a point where he just like escapes from their grasp. And they don't do anything until he just has like plenty of time, apparently, to put a freaking magnet on his car.
So, yeah, he's building... What we will find out later in the episode
is a new toy for kids to buy.
Is the Zeo cannon
a new toy for kids to buy?
And to enable them to use more Sentai footage.
That too.
He says, "I've got to go get a chromium magnet from my lab. I'll be right back." And then the next thing we see is him walking down the street, driving his little car and with a backpack on. And part of me's like, you are making a weapon for fighting evil. Just teleport.
Yep. Which he proceeds to do after he defeats the cogs.
Yeah. And he puts this thing called they call a chromium magnet, which the prop they use is one of those magnets you use for picking up like paper clips with. Right. And he puts it in the back of the car and starts driving it around. And the magnet is so powerful, it can move cogs and Prince Sprocket and the monster of the episode, Googlemeister.
Chromium.
And at that point, I go, why do they never use magnets again? Also,
because there's a very simple explanation.
Also, that's not how science works.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because if the magnet was that powerful, it would shut down the car.
Chromium!
More like copium. Well,
this is like, this is exactly like what King Mondo's neo-plutonium armor, remember? It doesn't have a scientific explanation. It just exists.
Yeah, yeah. And we find out that at some point in his past, Prince Sprocket was given a nuclear reactor. And when he was given the nuclear reactor, he only ever played with the missiles. At which point I'm thinking, you have a nuclear reactor, just nuke it from orbit. Just nuke Earth from orbit, you'll be fine.
We've talked at length, I think on every episode, about how despite the Machine Empire's kind of like pretty cool start, they're useless. Like Rita and Zed, despite all of their childish antics and silliness, had better plans to defeat the Rangers and had more successes than these nitwits.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Oh. As we take a breath. So Bulk tries a couple of different ways to win over the police commissioner's daughter. Mm-hmm. I think she has a name. It's like Courtney or something.
Barbara Gordon?
Yeah, that was my first thought. I was like, we'll just kind of call her Barbara.
Connie.
See, I knew there was a C in there.
She's Connie Crandall.
Oh, that poor child. Anyway, so at first, Bulky tries to be like very sophisticated because Tanya said that's what she liked in a guy. I'm like, okay. And that doesn't work. And they really anger the commissioner. And then they do the weird poetry thing. And poor Bulky really tried. He got Skull's help to write the poetry. But the end result, of course...
Show up as beatnik poets with, like, the like, yeah.
It's, like, that, like, deep, like, underground poetry, man, that, like, we just can never understand because we're not, like, in the zone.
Yeah.
Oh. Does Sprocket even have... Wait, I'm sorry. We got off track because we were talking about Sprocket.
Yeah.
And he demanded a new toy because the disadvantaged children on Earth were... In Angel Grove, I should say. Were getting toys. And so he demanded one. So Mommy and Daddy gave him one.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the plot.
Yeah.
And he decides to play with a flamethrower.
And he's given Googlemeister... he instantly teleports down to Earth with, and Googlemeister instantly sets fire to a phone booth. And I'm like, yep, yeah, that'll get the Rangers' attention.
Phone booths are still important.
Right. But so are, like, you know, houses and people and all the buildings you teleported in next to.
Come on, the Machine Empire at this point, their entire job is to annoy the Rangers, not actually cause death, destruction, and havoc.
Yeah.
Even though they could launch a literal invasion of Earth.
Yeah.
Even if it does take them 24 hours to make 24 cogs.
Yep. Cogs, which are vulnerable to custard pies, but that's not till next episode.
Of the Rangers, they don't really have a plot this episode.
No, the Rangers are very much there to do
the Ranger things,
to do the Ranger stuff, and they are literally there to morph, fight a monster, call a Zord, and kill it.
Yep.
That's all they're there for. This is very much a Bulk and Skull centric episode.
But I will say that I found it really funny that they were doing a decade dance, and Rocky's like, I don't know what decade to dress up as. And then he asks, like, hey, Kat, what are you dressing up as? And she's like, oh, you'll have to wait and see. I'm like, you're literally going to dress up in a poodle skirt, aren't you? And I was right, to the surprise of absolutely no one.
What decade would you have gone as?
I would have gone with like the 40s or the 50s, but I would not have dressed up in the most stereotypical Grease outfit on earth as someone who dresses in period style clothing. And I say period style because they're not authentic items. Literally every day, even though today I just kind of in a weird late 60s, early 70s on it. I'm an unintentional hippie today. But like a dark hippie, because this is a gray dress. Anyway, if I had time to put into it, I think I actually would have dressed up in like 1900s or 1910s, like Edwardian era, because I love the long skirts and poofy blouses. Hmm. What about you, Ben? What would you have gone as?
Do you know what my first instinct was? I would have like not shown up. And then when everyone was like, why didn't you show? I was like, oh, I was there. I was just dressed as the decade we lost when we went back in time with the Alien Rangers saga.
Bravo. Bravo, sir. Well played.
I'll be there in 10 years. Don't worry about it.
So speaking of that, the other Rangers dressed up in interesting outfits. Adam dressed as a hippie.
Yeah.
Dressed as a she dressed up as the 1920s. Mm-hmm. Flapper, there we go.
Flapper, yeah.
I can't English. It's all right, guys, it's only my second language. And then there's Rocky, who spent all this time lamenting about what decade he was gonna be, and he dresses up like John Travolta.
Hmm.
Only to be upstaged.
Yeah.
By Tommy Oliver. But like, you gotta give Rocky credit. He also wore the wig.
Yeah.
And I'm like, weren't y'all born in the 80s? Like, put on, like, grab a jacket, put on some giant shoulder pads, and you're good.
Yeah, I think... I mean, that would have been kind of the easy way out, but like, I think it was supposed to be the decade, like just a favorite decade in general, not that you've been alive.
That's true. It was
like, there was a joke early. There is a joke earlier in the episode where it's like, oh, we got to dress as our favorite decade. And Rocky's like, I've not been alive long enough to have a favorite decade. Cause in universe, he's like 17.
Yep.
Right, yep. Like, notably, the Rangers are out when they first encounter Google Meister. They are out leafleting cars by putting leaflets under the windscreen wipers the day of the dance. Not only is this an ineffectual use of marketing, because people are going to have had things to do by then.
Yep.
But these are the incredibly, like, environmentally concerned, recycle-friendly Rangers.
Not anymore! Those were the season one Rangers. These are different people.
And they're sticking paper under every car. you know that 90% of people are picking up that piece of paper, balling up and throwing it on the floor so they can get in their car.
Yep. These are not the smartest teenagers on the planet. They just have the attitude, apparently.
Yeah. And Rocky's second piece of advice. Another note I made here was you talked about how Bulk goes for the second time as a poet. And it's because he overhears Rocky saying, "You'll never catch me
being all emotional, sensitive."
Yeah, sensitive and doing that poetry stuff. At which point I went, "That's because you don't know how to write."
He does chemistry.
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason why he's single, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Although he did have an interesting time with that, what was her name? The blind girl.
Penny,
thank you. Clearly that lasted.
Clearly. And then Stone gets fired, right?
Yeah. Let's the poetry antics were not appreciated, but there was the whole feather explosion.
Yeah, let's talk about Lieutenant Stone getting fired, shall we?
Yeah, he got fired.
Now, don't get me wrong. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. However, I'm not sure why Lieutenant Stone gets fired for Bulk and Skull messing up.
Well, because they are junior police detectives and they are under, oh my God, logic is actually going to win this one. They are under his charge. Therefore, anything that they do reflects on him. So if they screw up, he screws up because he's not. Right.
That's fine. But the inference is that he's getting fired, but they aren't.
Yeah. Because they're children.
You would think all three of them would be getting fired.
No, because they're children. He'll probably, if Commissioner Not Gordon had his way here, Bulk and Skull would have been reassigned to a drill sergeant or something.
Yeah.
Either that or he would have fired them, but he didn't get the chance to.
Because they quit.
Because they literally, as soon as Lieutenant Stone gets fired, so do Bulk and Skull quit. So it's not like the commissioner or whatever, chief or whatever, has a moment to even figure out what he's going to do with Bulk and Skull.
And then we never hear from Connie Crandall again.
But they have a cute moment at the dance.
That's true.
It's a really cute moment.
Yeah.
Like, kudos to Connie for sticking it to her dad. Could have asked her dad to reinstate them, but they quit, so it's fine. I'm just teasing at this point.
Kudos, yes. But I would have liked that to not be the reason they had the cute moment of the dance.
I mean, it's not really the reason. The reason they had a cute moment of at the dance is because Connie did like him. She was just confused by his antics, which, as a girl, valid. Because if I was, I'd be having an identity crisis for this man, thinking, why is this guy just not talking to me like a human?
Yeah, but you would think, now...
Don't forget, she literally just met them at the beginning of the episode.
Right, but you ever, how many jobs have you had in your life?
A fair few, why?
I've had a few in my life as well, and I can tell you that the moment you join a job, there is someone, I don't know who it is, who goes, look out for that guy. He's kind of weird. And if someone's going to do that, it's going to be about Bulk and Skull when it comes to that police force. And there is no way that her father hasn't talked about Bulk and Skull, the people who arrested the mayor last season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got nothing. Welcome to Power Rangers, where plots are only relevant to the moment.
Continuity.
What's that. But yeah, exactly. Legitimately, though, I did like the moment they have at the dance where she's like, you know, I like you for who you are. And he tries to put an accent. She gives us this look like, come on, bro. And he just like takes off the fake mustache. Although Bulkmeyer looks good with a fake mustache.
I hasten to say this, but Bulk and Skull's undercover stuff might be the best stuff in Zio.
Yeah.
All of it.
They're good at it.
When they're the statues in the park. Oh,
that was so funny.
Like, yeah, just, and when they're the women and Lieutenant Stone's hitting on them, like.
That was both traumatic and hilarious at the same time.
Yeah. My only other note for this episode is, apparently the Zio Megazord is weak to cotton candy.
My question is, how does a monster built by a machine empire that is, you know, machines, mm-hmm. do stuff with cotton candy, which is a very Earth-like human substance? Like, the flamethrower makes sense. Mm-hmm. But how does the cotton candy fit into that?
Can you spin cotton candy onto a stick again?
No.
Huh?
No, I did not do that.
No, but how do you know how it's done?
Yeah, there's like a little machine that like you
a pour little the what?
Okay, there is a machine. Right, but that's a human invention.
Right.
So why is a conquering galactic force that makes flamethrowers would put effort into making a cotton candy manufacturing machine?
Okay, so side quest at this point into a television show called Babylon 5. One of my favorite television shows of all time. In which there is an alien race called the Narn. And the Narn, at a certain point in the show, have their homeworld invaded and conquered.
Yeah, I'm with you so far.
Okay. And an ambassador from Narn seeks refuge on this space station called Babylon 5. And later, another ambassador comes to the, another refugee comes to the station, and they sit down to eat. And they start eating, and they go, Chakar, you have imported Breen from Homeworld? How? And he says, this is not Breen. This is an Earth delicacy called Swedish meatballs. In one of the most undescribable facts in all of the universe, I have found out that every sentient civilization has a version of these Swedish meatballs. So it's entirely possible that there is a machine empire version of cotton candy.
But they don't eat.
Yeah, then it's not made of cotton candy. It just looks like cotton candy. It could be like monofilament wire or...
Fine. I can... Point made. The one thing I did know that I thought was kind of cute was Bulk and Skull dressed up as Bobbies in the... at the dance. Their little constable attire. They looked adorable. Yeah. They were very cute.
Couple of coppers.
So I don't know why, but I have this note. Maybe it's because it's Passover right now. At the time of this recording, we are Passover into the next day. But I have a note here that says, why is this monster different from all other monsters? And I don't know why I put that in there.
Because it has a... Because there's something about Googlemeister that when it talks, I keep feeling like it's one step from going, Flaven!
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like Professor Frink to pop out or something. Like, I don't know.
Well, all right. On that note, I think we've talked to death Bulk Fiction.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else to say. So now let's move on to Song Yellow.
So, small peek behind the curtain. When we were doing our research for this episode, Sash is like, oh, I'm about to sit down and do Song Song Yellow. And I went, you're going to love it. And then I sent her the gift saying, I'm being very, very sarcastic.
Look, this goes to your earlier point, right? Where Tanya seems to be doing everything. And now she's a singer for this episode, which absolutely no offense meant to the actress playing Tanya, because she's wonderful. And she's doing her best with very not great material. But
yes,
these are two songs. Like, she has a voice. She can carry a tune. That's great. These are the worst possible songs to assign someone of her type of voice. First of all, these songs are boring. And they should have been played at like a low-key college jazz club that's like about to be closed down for lack of business.
Yeah, they are very typical sort of poppy,
so
romancy songs.
Yeah, it's
the first one's about always being together, and there's a second one. There's a second one that I tuned out completely.
Yeah, so it's sort of like 90s background music in like this is the kind of music that should be playing during like a Please Donate to Save the Animals commercial.
It's not even like Sarah McLachlan levels.
Still not good. That's a separate category.
Like, but I will give them credit that at least they wrote two separate songs and didn't have her do the same song three times.
I mean, she did sing the first one twice, but we'll give it to her. To start this off, basically Rocky and Adam help Tanya produce this music video, which is like peak 90s.
From what Kat says, they all helped. But Adam is
the director.
The director. And apparently it's so good that Adam's going to grow up to be an excellent director one day.
I mean, in terms of like editing for music videos, it was quality editing. But I don't know. Like, it was typical editing for the 90s. Like, it's on par.
Yeah.
Right. So if like a high school student is able to produce or direct and produce and edit a music video of the same caliber as you see in a lot of these 90s music videos, that's actually very impressive.
Right. At which point, it is never mentioned again, and Tanya gets the spotlight. Even though this video is given to recording executives.
Yep.
I just gotta stand up with my boy Adam and be like, that's some nonsense, Bob.
And speaking of this, like, after the song, I do have this note that goes back to what you said earlier, which is like, are they trying to make Tanya and Adam a thing?
Yeah, I feel like they've been trying to do it for a while.
Yeah.
Ever since we saw them starting to train together
in the first batch of episodes we recorded.
Much earlier in the season.
Yeah.
It's much more obvious in the very next episode in Game of Honor, where she calls him sweetie at one point, and then Sean, her past boyfriend that we met earlier in the season, shows up, and her and Sean make up, and her and Sean hug, and Adam's like, oh, okay, that's enough of that at one point. So it's like, it does feel a bit like they're trying to, even if they're not trying to push them as an actual couple, they're at least like very, very, very good friends. Like, they spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, definitely. But then like Tommy notices this thing in the video and he rewinds it, and apparently there's a cog in the background of Tanya singing on stage, and they're like, oh my gosh, how did we not see that?
Yeah.
Not the point. Because then we transition to Ernie's opening up the juice bar for evening events now on Saturday nights, because he needs the money, or he needs all the business he can get. And I'm like, yeah, Ernie, because maybe you shouldn't let people rent out your juice bar rent free for events.
Yeah, or, you know, like, leave teenagers in charge.
Yeah, there's that too. Does he? I don't know.
Yeah, he needs to stop offering
to cater all of these events too, probably.
And then...
he opened up a juice bar at the beach.
Yeah, and then... Yeah. But there's a moment where they're watching the video and they see the cog for the first time. And Tommy says something about, like, if we didn't see him then, how many other times have we not seen them? And there's this implication that the Rangers are being watched. At which point I'm like, this could go somewhere.
And it doesn't.
And then the episode is like, ha, 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 you're an idiot.
Yeah. So in the literal next scene after all of this, because Tanya gets the chance of a lifetime to perform at Ernie's illustrious juice bar, where like all the record execs hang out, folks. But yeah. Anyway, Prince Sprocket is hitting bar mitzvah age, apparently.
Yep. And he has to prove himself man. Because he's going to have a mechanical bris.
No, sweetie. The bris happens at birth.
I know.
But anyway, the bordering on anti-Semitic implications of this aside, Prince Sprocket is given a monster that he's supposed to like learn to work together and control, whatever. And
yeah, it's like a remote control. It's like it's almost a Zord.
Yeah, it's got some Zord vibes, and they need like party supplies. And so the Queen Machina sends like, oh, we sent the cogs to get supplies, and I'm like, what supplies do you need for a robot birthday party? And apparently the answer is plastic plates and a pink tablecloth.
Yep.
And
not to over-exaggerate this a bit, there is a moment where a cog pops up from behind the table. As like the Rangers are doing like this assembly line, passing one to the other to pile plastic plates onto a table. And the cog just keeps popping up from behind the table, taking the plates and disappearing.
Yep.
And it might be the best thing in the entire episode. It's pure Rangers, comic gold.
And they don't notice. Nope. These are like, okay, look, these are elite fighting, you know, superheroes, essentially, who yep. literally just found out cogs have probably been watching them and are part of their lives. So you think for a hot minute they'd be a little extra vigilant, but no.
Yeah. No. You'd also think that, like, the omnipotent, powerful, all-knowing head in a tube and his robot sidekick would have their worldwide sensor net set so that at any point, any form of danger happening within 100 feet of the Rangers, they'd know about it.
Nah, too much effort. The Rangers can protect themselves. Why do we need to watch them? This is not important to anything. That explains why the Rangers get kidnapped or attacked so many times, and literally Zordon doesn't know anything. So I don't know.
I dislike it. I dislike it.
I have a note here that says the most clueless Rangers on the planet. And for a second there, I thought maybe the cogs were invisible. So I actually rewound the episode to see if there's any indication of it. And there wasn't. The Rangers are just stupid.
Yeah. And then they chase the cogs outside. They morph in the middle of the street.
Yep. It's fine. It was an empty street.
And they the outside of the super busy juice bar that we have seen has external seating and a bar that they have used for the rest of the season.
Well, that was, I think there's sort of an implication that that's a back entrance. There's this like, because there's like these pies that are supposed to be brought in, I guess, right? That they have on a rack. You wouldn't bring that to the front of the juice bar. You'd probably bring that to like a stock room.
In a normal world, yes.
Right. But we're in Angel Grove. Things don't make sense.
No. There's a whole cog fight, which is, excuse me.
It is the great pie fight.
I was about to say, which is just an excuse to hit things with custard pies.
Which, like, I did not think we needed this, but I guess it's sort of like in the sense that, like, in Blazing Saddles, you don't need them to, like, literally tear the curtain
knock down out a horse.
And have, right? and like have an actual pie fight in the middle of the, like, canteen at on the set. And yet here we are.
Yeah, but, like, apparently cogs are vulnerable to pies.
Well, they're not waterproof anymore, right?
But yet they are.
Right? So then, like, why doesn't Billy just build some kind of electromagnetic water gun?
And we saw with the Zeo... Oh, by the way, that was another note we didn't cover in Bulk Fiction. The Zeo cannon is supposed to cryogenically freeze these things. But when you shoot them, they explode! That's not how science works!
It's not how good writing works either, and yet here we are.
But yeah, like... Why at this point don't the Rangers just have magnets in everything because of the last episode? Like,
well, they don't need magnets because they have superpowers.
But they would never lose a fight again.
I know.
Just, like, build a big rocket and stick a comically huge magnet on the front and shoot it into space and have it solar powered so that it never stops moving. And it will just keep going, and it will drag the entire Machine Empire fleet with it, and it's problem solved. Like,
that would require thinking. Meanwhile,
who do the pies belong to?
Ernie, or whatever bakery he got them from.
So Ernie is now going to turn around and be like, "Well, I'm down like 20 pies,"
which is probably like $400.
Which is why he needs the money from the after hours stuff.
The Rangers are the bad guys, guys. Hey, at least it wasn't an abandoned warehouse.
Right, but can you think how many jobs they provide? The amount of times they have to rebuild the abandoned warehouse district?
But at that point, why do you need an abandoned warehouse district? Just so the Rangers have some place to fight bad guys?
Oh, I don't know.
Look, one of the biggest questions that Ben and I constantly have is how the world, whether that's the government or the economy or even the school system in Angel Grove functions.
How does Angel Grove, full stop? Like, and not like a period, the words full stop. Like, and then, but then we cut to our first view of Detective Stone's private eye office, right? Mm-hmm. Is that then?
Yeah.
What do you think?
What?
Of the private eye office.
Oh, of the office? You know, once Bulk and Skull kind of cleaned it up, it was a little bit nicer. It does sort of have those, like, stereotypical Columbo vibes. Right?
You know, Columbo wasn't a private detective, right?
Oh, that's right, he wasn't.
He was literally Lieutenant Columbo.
Well, he wore a trench coat. That's what detectives did.
That's true.
At one point, anyway.
That's a completely different franchise.
My point
is, we've tracked four different franchises in this episode.
He has these, like, stereotypical detective vibes, right?
Yeah.
The, like, screens, the weird glassy door.
The smoky glass with the words etched on it. Yeah.
But what's funny about all of this is not the office itself. It's the fact that Bulk and Skull are playing ping pong.
That's what you think is weird about this.
Yes.
What I think's weird about this is that apparently Lieutenant Stone, Detective Stone as he now is, doesn't have keys to his own office.
No. He said he forgot his key or he lost his key or something as he comes in. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought so too at first.
I may have been tuned out of the episode by this point.
But what's really funny about this this entire scene is not Lieutenant Detective Stone. It's the fact that Bulk and Skull managed to install an alarm system
Yeah, a laser tripwire alarm system.
A laser. So two things here, right? The laser tripwire alarm system, and they have all of these hidden things in Detective Stone's office that he doesn't know about. So kudos to Bulk and Skull for creativity and ingenuity on this, even though when they were cleaning, they just sort of tossed all of the trash and empty wrappers under the futon.
Bulk and Skull, let's repeat this. Bulk and Skull rigged a laser tripwire. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yep. It's just like, this is what I think a lot of people love about Bulk and Skull is that, yeah, they're goofy and they're silly, but they have talent, right? Like 2 seconds ago, we were talking about their undercover skills.
Yeah.
And now they've rigged a laser tripwire system that activates into a dance, like a monkey with
cymbals.
Cymbals, right? That's hilarious. And that is exactly right. It's like 2 points brilliant, 1 point ridiculous.
Right. But it's also completely out of their wheelhouse.
Maybe right? they asked Billy for help. I don't know.
Like that, like they should have shown that.
Would have been cool.
Because the things that Bulk and Skull are usually good at are things like reading people and going off their gut and social and like charisma based stuff. They've never shown to be good with laser tripwires.
Fine, we'll chuck it to Billy helping them. But it was fun though.
And then the rest of the episode is just kind of a Zord fight.
Yeah. Well, hold on. There's this whole little side plot here where Lieutenant Stone tells them that apparently there's been a long slew of these like fake ass people conning teenagers by giving them fake record deals and then like charging them for like studio space and all this jazz and a demo and just running away with their money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the record company hired Detective Stone for some reason. And they go to the Bulk and Skull on the case. And so they end up at the juice bar where Tanya is now singing. And then Tanya, after singing the same song we saw earlier, which was terrible, she gets approached by this record guy who wants to be a producer. He is a producer and wants to like offer her a record contract. And I'm like, you didn't even have a conversation. You know nothing about her, but okay, sure. That's how that works.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you have a demo or something that I can talk to my people? And like, maybe it's the dude's not so great acting, but like, even I was like, is he a real record producer? And so Tanya comes out, she goes into her backpack, and I don't know how much stuff she has in her backpack that she cannot see a giant freaking VHS tape in there, but she pulls it out and hands it to him, and she's like, yeah, here's my video, and he's like, oh my gosh, that's so professional, you have your own video already, and I'm like, oh, wait 20 years.
Yeah, cell phones will fix that.
I mean, even like 10 years from now, like record execs will have things on CDs.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's like, oh, send me your MP3 file. And now it's like, see my TikTok. Like,
yeah.
Technology, man.
People will get signed from YouTube.
Yeah. So there's this like moment where Tanya's like, or Kat asks her, like, what happens if you actually get this record deal? Are you going to take it? And she's like, oh, yeah, cool. Oh, boy. And it does sort of echo a plot that we've seen before and we'll see again, where a character has to, usually it's set up a little bit better, where a character has to choose between their dreams and desires and the responsibility of being a ranger. The first thing that comes to mind for me is Connor from Dino Thunder, right? Because he was a soccer guy and yeah. He gets this chance to like try out for this really important team and work with this amazing coach. And he ultimately has to give it up to save the world from Mezagog and be a Power Ranger. But the difference is that in Dino Thunder, they establish with the very first episode that soccer is his entire reason for existing.
Yeah.
He lives, breathes, and dreams about soccer, right? Here, I think this is the first time we've seen Tanya's interest in music. But I guess since she's and done so
the
many
only other- time we'll see it.
Yeah, so it just, it doesn't have, I was like, okay, she's obviously going to give up this record contract because this is the shtick of the episode and it probably won't go anywhere. And on ultimately it doesn't, because she does sing well at the audition or whatever, the second night, and they do offer her a record contract for some reason that baffles me. Yep. But considering most of the music I listen to is either made in Europe or is about as old as people's parents, considering most of the music I listen to was made pre-1993, like, what do I know about what is popular and what's going to be a hit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. Like, 90% of what I listen to is not this style of music, so this could be a very good example of that.
I don't know. But I don't know. So, I don't know. Ultimately, like I said, Tanya doesn't take the record deal, right? Like you said, the rest of the episode is basically a Zord fight and... Although something weird I read on the wiki and I need to ask Brian about is the Sentai version of this part of the episode of like the plot with Prince Sprocket. Apparently the plot in the part of the thing in the Sentai is that these are like living machines. So Queen Machina actually somehow gave birth to Prince Sprocket and what's his face that we see later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which like that is disturbing on a whole new level. Glad that didn't carry over too much in Power Rangers, because I feel like that would have traumatized children.
yeah. One thing I did quite like about the Zord fight is that it's a Zord fight on two levels.
Yeah.
Because Tommy's up in the red battle Zord and he's fighting the monster, which I think the English version is called Wrecking Ball, even though he's a Kendama.
Sure. Their names mean something.
But on the ground, the Rangers are fighting, the other Rangers are fighting a bunch of cogs. And I really like that dual level sort of fight dynamic where you can cut between them. And it's something we'll see a lot in so many seasons. When we get to Beast Morphers, that happens a lot in Beast Morphers.
Yeah. So the other thing to note is that the Rangers do sort of take note of the opportunity that this is for Tanya. So when they get called away in the middle of her set, she stays behind and Tommy's like, no, you stay, we go.
Yeah.
And so Tanya feels actually pretty guilty about the fact that the Rangers went off on, like, she couldn't help them. And so in a moment of, like, it is a very mature moment, right, to say no to a big opportunity because you have bigger responsibilities. And so Tanya does turn down the record deal, which, as it turns out, despite Bulk and Skull being like, no, you're a fake producer, was actually a legitimate, real record deal.
Yeah.
Granted, this is also not how any of this works. Even if she agreed, unless she's 18, she cannot sign a contract.
Yeah.
So, like, and all of these meetings would have been null and void because you did not have an attorney or parent, considering she's 17, right? Assuming they're all, like, 17.
Yeah.
They graduate next season, right? So let's say, right? So assuming they're all 17... the producers have literally zero right to speak to her. They should be speaking to, I guess, Kat's parents.
Right, but like, this happens quite a lot in Power Rangers, doesn't it?
Yeah, parents, like, don't exist.
It happened with Kim. It will happen. We've already brought it up at least once this episode in Dino Thunder with Kira for the exact same thing when it comes to recording artists. Where we get to meet Keldon Henderson for the first time. Like, it will happen over and over again throughout the years. Like, people too young to sign contracts and make commitments will absolutely
be taken advantage of.
Be given the power to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It just... It's weird because... I don't know. There's been a lot of times in this episode where Sasha and I just sat here and there's been these lulls in conversation. And it's because we're trying to find things to talk about. Because these episodes, they're just not...
They're not important. Substantive.
Yeah.
They're very cookie cutter filler episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really it. I mean, there's nothing here. None of these plot elements that are... The only plot element that is introduced here that carries over is Bulk and Skull no longer being junior police officers. They are now amateur detectives. Which, by the way, not sure if Lieutenant Stone knows this or if the City of Angel Grove knows this, but you actually need a license to be a private investigator.
Yeah. But they do talk about studying for their detective license.
That's true. You're right. I take it back.
And even that doesn't really last, does it? Because, like, it'll go until the end of the season.
Because next season they're chimps.
But they're back in the police force at the beginning of next episode. Next season. Because that's when they get assigned to go investigate the robbery that turns them into chimps.
Right. So I don't know. I got nothing. Power Rangers. Continuity.
Qua?
Yeah. So I think at this point, this is a really good segue out of Power Rangers and to ask you, Mr. Ben Taylor.
Yeah, like we need a good segue to get out of Power Rangers.
Mr. Ben Taylor, where can the people find you on that evil social media?
You find me on Twitter at Bob T. Goldfish. You can find me doing the video game thing a little bit more regularly now over at twitch.tv/321_TV. And you can find the sister show to Voices from the Grid Awesome Mania over at thxthockey.com. And then go to the X75 Productions drop down and click on Awesome Mania. And that is the wrestling podcast that myself and Michael do with a guest every month, usually our friend Matt Carroll. And we riff on pay-per-views. Currently, at the time of recording, from the year 1997, is designed to be listened to while you watch the pay-per-view. And yeah, that's me, really. What about you, Sasha?
Well, you can find me over on Twitter, just existing. I don't know why I have a Twitter. That is at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe. Fight me, Billy Kaplan. And over on geekgirl101.tumblr.com, where you will just constantly hear me ranting about Jewish representation. At the time of recording, which is April, I am reviewing and riffing on the episodes of Moon Knight. So if you are a fan of Moon Knight, but aren't sure if you want to watch it because of reasons of lack of Jewish representation, come read my riff on the episode and see if it's worth watching after that. It mostly is, but the Jewish representation is bad so far. But with two episodes left, who knows? And of course, you can find us on Twitter. That is VFTG_PR. And
you can always... Google Podcasts. Spotify.
Spotify. We are on Spotify. We are on, I think, Google Play or Apple Podcasts. Wherever podcasts are available, we are there now. You know, please tweet at us. Let us know what you think of these episodes. If you agree with our opinion, definitely if you don't agree with our opinion, just like tweet at us. We're happy to find out and tell you why you're probably wrong, but we're here to listen.
I will not say that you are wrong. I will merely say that you have yet to watch good Power Rangers.
That's such a nice way of putting it. And with that, Mr. Ben Taylor, take us out.
Ah, you remembered this time. Lovely.
One time.
It has been a hell of an episode. We've watched two very bad stories, but at least Adam Park was in them. That being said, we will leave you as we do on every episode that I am involved in, except for that one where Sasha cut off my intro, by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And since I don't get to do it often, I get to say, and may the power protect you.
Peace.